who don't fit in, where people can go to find things that have been hidden.
Again, that's Sex and Broadcasting, Thursday, October 13th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage.
Good morning. It is just 1 minute before 11 o'clock, and you're tuned in to KBOO Portland. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can always become one. All you need to do is go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Coming up next on The Boo, Dirtbag host Glenn Andreessen and his guest Jim Gilbert discuss the many different ways gardeners can use leaves, how to harvest fall fruits and vegetables, and Jim's garden travels to Korea. That sounds like fun. This show has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. And from the Skyline Tavern Project, a not-for-profit historic saloon at the edge of Forest Park dedicated to supporting art and ecology through live music, food, and horseshoes. 8031 Northwest Skyline Boulevard and skytav.com. And now, The Gardens Show.
Good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for The Dirt Bag. Morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. I'm alone in the studio, but not in my guest. In other words, Jim is on the phone. Jim, you there?
I'm here, Glenn.
Yeah, Jim's there. He's out on the farm, getting ready for more travels, yet more travels.
That's right. I just came back from Korea and Russia, and then on Thursday, heading for Spain and Germany.
A man about the world.
Well, you know, it's a time of year. There's a lot of fruit ripening, and it's time to check things out. And in Spain, there's going to be a protecting conference, so it's kind of my passion right now is checking out the percent of why he's playing in Korea. That's what I was doing there as well.
Jim, you're kind of pixelating on us a little bit. Are you out in the field? Or are you at the home? Or where are you?
Well, I'll try to move closer to the window. Sometimes that seems to help. Is that any better?
That seems to be better.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll be over here. Sure.
So you're going to Spain for persimmon. Is it a symposium or what is it?
Yes, it's a scientific symposium on persimmon in Valencia, Spain. And we have, it should be very exciting. I mean, we've never been to Spain before, so it'll be interesting to check that out. And the weather forecast is temperatures in the 70s to 80, so it's time to throw away the wool coats and pants and stuff we took to Siberia and put back on the shorts and short sleeve shirts.
Yes. Well, that's why persimmon, that figures in why persimmon is our plant of the month. And we'll get to that. I want to talk a little bit about the All About Fruit Show, which is coming up next Saturday and Sunday. At the half past the hour, we'll have our garden stumper. We'll also be talking about leaves, how we can use leaves. And after the second half of the show, we will focus in on harvesting fall fruits, you know, once again, persimmon. And I have some special questions for you, Jim, on some fruits of my own that I'm having some, well, not necessarily issues with, but I want to get your take on that.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. So the Home Orchard Society, first of all, putting on the All About Fruit show Saturday and Sunday in Canby, Clackamas County Fairgrounds. What can you tell us about that, Jim? You're still on the board there, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, I won't be there because I'll traveling. But all of our volunteers and members and all will be setting up on Friday, a lot of fruit. It's the must-go-to place for anybody who likes to grow fruit because, I don't know, there's hundreds of varieties of apples and pears and, well, I'm not sure there'll be any plums, a little late for that, but all the fall fruits will be there, quince, hardy kiwis. You just can't imagine all the stuff that's there, plus all the cool folks to rub shoulders with.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a pretty inexpensive thing. It's for an individual, it's $5 admission. For a whole family, only $10. That's for members. If you're a non-member, it's $7 for an individual and $12 for the family. And if you join the Home Orchard Society, get that waive so you don't have to pay it at all.
And if you're a member and you volunteer, you don't have to pay.
That's true.
Yes, okay, sorry.
And then the parking is free. So that's a pretty cool deal, too.
Yes, it is.
And it's nice, you know, Canby's a nice place. I mean, it's a country town with a nice ambiance, and it's certainly worth the drive on a nice fall day to come out and check out the fruit.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be pretty wet, and that's a good way to spend it inside.
That's right, and it's a nice big space.
Yeah.
And there's also speakers, too, so you can come and learn more about, you know, growing your own fruit in your own yard.
Yes, I didn't bring a list of who's speaking, but I did see that many of them have been on the dirt bag before. How about that?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of local passionate folks about that do this stuff, and so it's a great place to meet them. And there's also, you can order plants. There's going to be some booths there from different nurseries. I know One Green World will be there, and other nurseries will be there, at least other vendors. So. It's really a great place to go Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 4.
So put two dates on your calendar, this Saturday and Sunday, and then next March something, probably mid-March, the fruit propagation fair. So here's why it's a two-parter. This weekend you will go and taste the fruit, and the ones that you really like you write down because you'll forget by next
right.
March. And then
well, a lot of people take they take notebooks with them and they walk around the All About Fruit show making notes of varieties that they like, and then they can order those plants. In some cases the Home Orchard Society can actually create a plant for you, or you can get an already grafted and ready to grow plant from various nurseries.
And since those are sometimes limited of the varieties that you could choose from, the fruit propagation fair, then in March you could show up and choose your own scion wood and learn how to build your own tree there of the variety that
actually they even perform a service, they'll even graft it for you.
That's right, if you don't want to learn. So it's a two-parter and well worth your time. I'd say I've learned 80% of what I know about fruit growing from Home Orchard Society and its members and the events. Not to be taken lightly.
No.
All right.
It's really kind of a one-of-a-kind event.
Mm-hmm.
Not much like it.
There are stores and retail outlets that have apple tastings this time of year, but nothing like this. I would estimate at least 100 varieties of apples, probably 150, maybe 200, and maybe 250 to 300 or more pears. Can you believe that?
Well, yeah, I don't think there's actually, if you put them all together, you might get to that number, but probably not that many pears compared to Apple. I think apples are going to be the big number.
Well, from what I've heard, and I mean, from what I understand in the past, you know, when the crew goes down to the germplasm repository there outside of Corvallis and gather up pears to...
Yeah, they get a lot.
Yeah, yeah. There's, in any event, it as Jim said, it's one of a kind.
Yep.
Okay.
Canby
Fairgrounds, Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby, 10 to 4 Saturday and Sunday.
Yep.
More information at online, homeorchardsociety.org.
Correct.
Okay, well, let's move on to our plant of the month, the persimmon. Now showing color, and some of them are coloring up. I don't know that they're exactly ripe yet, are they? Jim?
Well, you know, it's funny because we had a very warm early spring, which for some fruits got them going, and in a lot of cases our fruit was ripening a couple of weeks early. But on persimmon, I was talking about with somebody about that just recently. They don't get going so early, so I don't know that they benefited from that warm weather, and they're just sort of a normal fall. They're coloring up. They probably need to get a little more time yet to get fully sweet and orange. But I'm watching them, and you know, it depends upon where you live, of course. Out here in the country where we have cooler nights than you folks do in Portland, the persimmons are probably a little further behind. But I'm optimistic there will be a good crop still.
Well, I've seen some branches being weighted down. That's for darn sure. And I have seen a squirrel, you know, eating them. So,
well, they must know.
Yeah, well, it's edible, at least a little bit edible to them.
Right.
So let's talk about this can tie into another subject that we have for this dirt bag, and that is the, you know, harvesting and when to harvest these fall fruits and, you know, fruit in this case. When's good for persimmon?
Well, you know, so as many folks know, there are two kinds of persimmons. Two kinds that are widely grown here in the Northwest. One would be called astringent, which has to be soft before you can eat it, and the other non-astringent, Fuyu and Jiro type persimmons that you can eat like an apple. The general rule of thumb is that once the persimmon is orange, fully colored orange, it's ready to be consumed. And for the Fuyu and Jiro types, that's true. You can usually, they should be ready to go once they're fully orange. For the other types, the astringent kind, which would include sago and hachia and fire crystal and some others, they can be picked when they're fully orange, but they'll need to sit for a while until they get soft before you can eat them.
Uh-huh. So they ripen, they will continue to ripen off the tree.
That's correct. In fact, if people back in the day, you know, in stores, you used to find these beautiful hachia persimmons. Nobody knew what they were. You know, it wasn't, I think the advertising information was deficient, but you could buy them in the store, the large acorn-shaped fruit, but nobody really knew what to do with them. But that's what you do, is you just let them sit. They sell them firm, of course, and then after a week or two at room temperature, they get soft, and I think they're very, very delicious. Some people prefer the apple type, the kinds you can eat firm, to the astringent type, but I like both of them.
Are the acorn-shaped ones, are they all stringent? Astringent?
Generally speaking, yes. In my experience, the only ones you would ever find the difference between the two types in appearance, the ones that are sold, if you buy them in a store, the round, flattish ones are the Jiro and Fuyu type persimmons, and the longer pointed ones are the astringent type, which are typically the main variety is Hachia.
Okay, I'm just trying to get this straight in my mind here, that the flatter ones can be eaten like an apple, but they can also ripen up.
The ones you can eat like an apple will also get soft.
Yeah. Okay.
And can be eaten that way too. Although I think the I would say that the ones that are designed to be eaten when they're soft are probably sweeter, but sweeter when they're fully ripe.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And do these trees need, you only need one?
Do they need what?
Do they need a pollinizer? One tree
no.
to plant? Or
Yeah. All of the persimmon varieties that we are commonly grown are self-fertile.
Self-fertile, right.
So one tree is plenty. They're really a great fruit. I really recommend them because there's really no significant pest problems or disease problems. And add to that, they're really nice ornamentals. And many Japanese gardens are kind of the centerpiece of the garden around which they put other vegetables and fruit. And they're really, really quite strikingly attractive in the fall, especially when the leaves turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then the leaves turn color and then they fall off. And then the orange fruit hangs on into December. So it's quite a beautiful tree.
Yeah. My neighbor's tree is huge. I mean, I don't know how you consider huge, but, above their house. And
know,
it's as big as their garage. They asked me a little bit about pruning it, and I said, do it.
Yeah, that's got to be a pretty old tree. The biggest one in my yard here, which has probably been, it's been here for about as long as I've been here, which is over 30 years, is I guess maybe 12 to 14 feet tall.
Uh-huh. Well,
it doesn't get a lot of fertilizer or water, so it's probably one of the reasons it's not so big. But
well, I don't think this one gets much anyway, but it's a beautiful tree.
Yeah.
And I hope to partake in some of them.
What's the fruit? Can you tell what kind it is? What variety?
Well, it must be more of the flat type.
Uh-huh.
But because they're not the acorn shape.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're flat. The flatter.
Yeah, when you take a bite of it, when it's firm, you will find out real quickly.
Oh, because
if it
would be
astringent or not astringent.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean about that. Boy, it'll really pucker your your
it's
taste
the
buds.
Astringent type. Yeah, you will know quickly.
Right.
Astringent.
Okay. Well, if you have any questions on that, on persimmon, or any other type of gardening question, feel free to give us a call here at the studio, 503-231-8187. We'll take our first break here. And the only way I could tie this into persimmon is from the word flat. And so this is
you're so creative. Right?
Yeah. So this is an old, a lot of my tunes, of course, are old, but this is the Atlanta Rhythm Section. Tasty little instrumental blues in Maud's Flat. Blues and Mods Flat from the Atlanta Rhythm Section, their album Third Annual Pipe Dream, 1974. Jim, we've got a couple of questions about Persimmon. One, we'll just ask you. It came from an anonymous asker. What can you use persimmons for?
Well, you can eat them fresh, and when they're in there, and you can dry them, which is very popular.
Peel them first, probably.
You can dry them peeled or unpeeled.
Okay.
I've done both ways.
Okay.
I just came from Korea, where they're very, very popular and widely available in stores, both in the dried and fresh state. And then once they're soft, you can make persimmon pulp with them and use that to make delicious cookies and cakes. They add kind of a moistness to them that's really very appealing. In fact, there's even an industry in the United States of the Native American persimmon being used in Illinois and Indiana, places that people harvest it and sell the pulp commercially there. And I've also heard of persimmon wine, although I haven't tried any. I'm sure there's probably some other ways you can use them.
They store pretty well. I mean, not for months and months, but I'd say a month.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
I mean, that's what's really just not real cold storage, it's just cool. I suppose in the fridge they could last even a bit longer.
Yeah, I've not been able to store them really long in the cooler, but when they're firm, they'll hang on for probably up to 2 months in cold storage. But they will, if even in a cool room, they will ripen. They will soften.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we also have a couple of phone calls here. First one is from Amber. Good morning, Amber. You're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning. I have a question about a raspberry plant. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. Well, I bought a raspberry plant, and it's the kind that is supposed to grow in a pot, so it's in the pot. And now, about a month ago, the leaves started curling all up, and it looks terrible, like it's going to die, but I hope not. I gave it some organic fertilizers one time, the kind that you mix in, sort of granulated. And other than that, I watered it. What do you think?
Is it possible that it dried out once?
No, I don't think so. I was thinking maybe I watered it too much.
In a pot, I think that would be pretty hard to do unless it was sitting in a saucer.
It was.
Jim, yeah. You got any?
My first question is, you said that it was designed to grow in a pot. I don't know of any particular raspberry that is designed only for pot culture. I mean, is that...
Well, that's what it says on the tag, and that's what they said when I bought it.
Do you know what the name of the variety is?
Not right this minute. It's outside, and I don't have it in my head.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of any raspberry that can't grow in the ground, and that would be usually a normal place for them to grow.
Right. I didn't want to put it in the ground because I have small space.
Sure.
And
sure.
I thought it particularly to go stay in a pot.
Sure. And overwatering, your concern about that may be very justified. It's probably of the failures of plants that I've known about in the years I've been doing this. I would guess somewhere around 90% of failure has to do with overwatering, and then the rest may be underwatering. But it's very easy to do that. And the way I grow up plants in pots, I kind of use the weight method. I'll pick the pot up when it's fully watered and get a sense of how much it weighs. Mm-hmm. And then as it slowly dries, kind of keep checking that and feeling it, and then water it only when it's really necessary. Mm-hmm. Deep watering and frequent deep watering is better than frequent shallow watering.
What size pot is it?
Oh, golly.
I mean, diameter, inches.
It's- pretty good size, not huge. But
I mean, bigger than 12 inches in diameter?
Oh, yeah, bigger than 12 inches. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And so what does the plant look like now?
Oh, well, all the leaves are all curled up, and it put out some raspberries a few weeks ago.
Is it every single leaf?
Yeah, the whole thing, it's all curled up.
Hmm.
Yeah, some of the leaves died on it, like those would be the old ones. But I just had it, this is the first year I've had it.
Are there any of the new leaves, are they good or are they curled too?
No, they're all curled up. All the new stuff is curled up too.
What soil did you use to put in?
Potting soil.
What kind of soil?
Potting soil. Uh-huh. And I mixed some compost in with it too.
From where?
Oh, I put my own compost.
Your own compost?
Yeah, uh-huh. It's really tight now. I'm out here with it now. It's pretty tight. The roots are getting full, you know, tight in the pot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I pulled it out of that thing it was sitting in and put sticks under.
Did you take it out of the pot? Or
yeah, I took it out of the thing, the saucer thing. Mm-hmm. It was
the
in
plant,
all summer.
The plant is still in the pot, right?
Yeah, it's still in the pot, uh-huh.
One thing you could do this time of year won't hurt because it's going dormant anyway.
Uh-huh.
Is to actually take it out of the pot,
uh-huh,
and check out the roots,
yeah,
and see if they look white and alive or if they're sort of black and rotten. You know, that'll give you some sense of whether the root system is still good. And it may be that the plant is just basically going dormant. I mean, it's that time of year.
Well, a month ago she said that they started curling.
Yeah.
That sounds a little.
Yeah.
A little atypical,
yep,
doesn't it? For Jim, what are the?
I've got some white stuff on them, but it's not totally moldy. I'm really up on what mold is.
Did you say that the soil surface is a little bit of white, whitish on it?
No, I was talking about the leaves.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Well, here it's getting some more raspberries.
Jim, what are the symptoms of an overwatered plant?
Well, they can be the same as an underwatered plant, because basically what happens is if the roots die from overwatering, and they actually will die, and then the top of the plant will wilt because it can't get water from the roots.
Yeah, and she said that it was, you had it in a saucer.
Yeah, it was, until just now. Well, I live a white salmon, and my garden is long and narrow on the south side of my apartment, and it's about 3 or 4 feet wide and 40 feet long. And so I have the plant on this, on the east end where the water spout is. And so I probably watered it too much and let it sit in the water.
Yeah. Well, so you can hopefully rectify that by doing what you've already done. And taking it all out of the saucer and then just let the rains do the natural thing.
Yeah. What about some new growth that's coming out of the ground on one side, and then there's a couple of pieces that are kind of dead. So it's acting like a regular raspberry.
Yeah. It could be root-bound, too.
Yeah, that's somewhat. What I'm thinking of. My question now was going to be, how about if I, excuse me, put it in a little bit of a bigger pot?
No, I would divide it.
Oh, okay.
You know, keep half of it in that pot or a quarter of it or something,
uh-huh,
even, but separate it.
Okay,
they
so
can
take some of it out then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, because if I totally repot the whole thing, it might stress it out even more.
No,
in the process of doing that, you will see what the root system is like.
Right.
Right.
I would definitely check the roots, and you could also take your fingernail and scrape the surface of the bark a little bit to see if it's green underneath, because that'll help give you a sense of whether it's still alive. But it sounds like maybe it's still trying to grow, and I would definitely not water it anymore this year.
Don't water it anymore at all?
No.
That's a pot and everything dry out?
No. I mean, I think he means supplemental water.
Oh.
But if she took away the saucer, then any rain or whatnot would pass through and not, drowning roots.
That's right.
But you might take it out of the rain this time or for a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's actually under an eave. It's under a 3 foot,
okay,
2 foot overhang from the side of the apartment.
Well, do what Jim suggested and, lift it and, you know, get an idea of when it starts drying out, then move it out into the, let the rains.
Okay, let the rain get on it.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, good luck. Let us know how things work out, too, if you think about it next year.
Okay, thanks a lot. I love your show.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. David. Good morning, David. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hey, thank you. Good morning.
Sure.
I have two questions for you. The first is time-sensitive, so we'll start there. I have shallots and garlic to put in the ground. I know it's getting late. It's also about to rain a whole bunch.
No, it's not too late. It's perfect time. Perfect time.
Should I try to get them in before the rain?
It's a lot more comfortable for you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter to them. It'd be good to do it today, and then they'd get plenty of rain in. But otherwise, that's not to worry.
Okay, so I don't need to worry about them rotting in the ground or anything like that.
No. Shouldn't.
Perfect.
I mean, unless you have poor drainage or you're planting them in a pot and you have a saucer.
Okay. All right, cool. That sounds good. Second question. In the spring, I purchased a combination plum tree. And I found out after putting it in the ground, it was my first tree. And what I noticed was the crotch angles on all the grass were super sharp. I thought it was something I could correct. It became pretty clear that I couldn't. The nursery has agreed to reimburse the tree, which is great. I can replace it. But is there anything I can do with the existing plum tree that I have in the ground?
What is it that you want to do? I mean, what is it you want to accomplish?
Well, I think the only thing I can really imagine is cutting it off below the poor grass and then rebuilding the tree on my own.
You've got the four grafts on there now and the tree is alive. Is there some reason why you can't just let it grow the way it is? What did you do to try to spread the branches out?
Okay. We lost him. So maybe he can call back and let us know. And I didn't hear what he said, that the angle of the graft was a little too sharp. Is that what he said?
Yeah, a narrow crotch angle was what I understood.
Yeah, okay. And
so normally what you could do is to over some times, you know, as you probably know this, Glenn, you just spread that by putting either stakes or pieces of wood in between their branch spreaders, they call it, and something to push the branch out to make the angle more, you know, at a less sharp angle. But if the tree's alive and has grafts, the grafts are alive, I think it's worth doing some keeping it. I mean, I don't think I'd cut it off.
Yeah, and I don't know if he is wanting to espalier it. I don't think he said that, but it'd be better nice if he told us all these things here. So,
right.
But boy, I don't recommend an espaliering a plum tree.
No. I think there's some unless the tree is totally has some other problem with it. I wouldn't just throw it away.
No, I don't think he's going to.
But cutting it off.
Below it and then grafting it on there. Yeah, that's right. He said that. You know, in the very least, okay, was it David?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, David, your concern is that you don't, is it four different varieties?
Correct.
And you wanted wider angles because are you planning on espaliering this?
No, they're just, my understanding is because they're so sharp, and they're sharp like they're touching the trunk of the tree, is that once they start bearing, there's a risk that you'll get some rot in the crotch and they'll maybe break off.
Okay. Well, that is pretty, narrow angle there, all right.
Yeah.
But as Jim was saying, you know, you can put in spreader sticks.
Uh-huh.
Between the trunk and the graft limb, or you can, I've seen people weight them down with rocks or tie them down to the ground or whatever, just to get a little bit more space in there. But if it's easier to get a new tree and they're willing to do that, then the only thing you're losing is time, which is right. kind of important.
Yeah, yeah. But as I was saying, David, I have a question and a comment. So first question is, did you do anything to try to spread those branches out? And then my comment is that if the tree's in the ground and alive, you might as well. I wouldn't cut it off. I would think I'd let it go and see what kind of fruit you get. Because
In some respects, it's not bad because, boy, if you really have a bumper crop, those limbs are going to bend down anyway.
Right.
Of course, the narrower the crotch angle, the easier it is to break off too. It's kind of a little bit counterintuitive.
Right. Yeah, I think letting it go for a little bit is a good thought. The only trouble with that for me is it's taking up valuable real estate.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't tried. I tried using a small spreading stick or something, and they were just so woody and so steep that it really seemed impossible.
How big around caliper is the graft branch?
I'd say between a half and half an inch at the most.
Yeah. I don't know, Jim. I mean, it's still spreadable.
Yeah.
Or trainable.
That's certainly a size that I would be spreading. It may seem stiff, but if you start moving if you had spreading sticks, describe something between them, and you just keep increasing that, I'm sure that with that size of branch, it will move outward away from the trunk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's a dilemma.
Well, I'll give it a go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks for the call. Thanks for calling back, too.
You bet.
Glenn.
Yes.
There was a berry farmer who called in and said that the lady with the raspberry cane really just needed to stick it in the ground.
Okay. That might take care of all of her problems there. She did say, okay, another David? Jim. We had a Jim on the line, and now we lost another Jim on the line.
So I called twice, but anyway.
Oh. David.
My question is about Jim. Pomegranates. I don't know if we can grow them up here, but on my recent trip back up from California, which I did last year also, I brought a bag full from a neighbor that I visit down there, and they weren't split yet, and my question is, last year we just left them on a shelf in a room and they actually ripened. And later, instead of breaking them open and having all the berries kind of a white color, they all turned red. Is that a normal thing? Will pomegranates ripen?
After they've been picked?
Yep.
Jim?
Well, that's a really good question. For about... Well, as long as I've been doing this nursery, I've been trying to grow pomegranates. And so far, had a few, but nothing that I could say would be making me want to say, it's absolutely a good crop for the Northwest, Pacific Northwest.
Okay, I'll go along with that. Yeah. But as far as the ripening, I just thought I'd throw that out there because it worked really well last year. We just kept a couple dozen of them on a shelf, and when one looked pretty good, we got nice and red, and we opened them up, and they turned red. But earlier they weren't, so they were ripening off the tree.
Did you eat them then?
Oh yeah,
and they were tasty.
They were tasty.
All right.
But these were fruit you brought from California.
Yes, yeah. Around Sacramento area.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't qualify as Pacific Northwest. All right.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, Northwest California.
Yeah.
Anyway, they were good. I just thought I'd throw that out for you. I also heard something the other day. I think they were in Tajikistan, and the people over there, rather than open them up and eat the berries that way, what they do is they squish them lightly with their fingers or on a hard surface, and they crush all those berries up inside the skin, and then they poke a small hole in it, and they drink the juice out of the skin, which I'd never heard of before.
Sounds like certainly something to do. I was in southern Russia and went to a market where they
they were taking pomegranates and basically just cut them in half, and they put them on a juicing machine and make pomegranate juice. I mean, just like a one of those old orange squeezers, you know, where you just squeeze a half of the orange and make juice. And they were making, you know, glasses of juice right there on the spot. So that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, same concept. You know, you pick a ripe one off the tree and smash it up and stick a hole in it and suck the juice out. I guess that works too.
Well, I can't wait to try that in Oregon. But
next time I go down, I'll bring some up for you guys.
that would be wonderful.
All right, my friends. Thank you.
You bet. Yeah, Jim, you're still growing them, but the plant grows, but doesn't fruit too well.
We got a few fruit last year. They were on some seedlings we bought. Seeds we bought back from China and then created seedlings, and they were, small. And somewhat okay, but, you know, they weren't something yet where it seems to be the problem that we just don't have enough heat here to get the flowering right. We get on one of our plants, we get lots of male flowers, but we don't get female flowers. So we have pretty flowers, but no fruit.
Well, before we go to our stumper theme, and Jim's got a doozy of a stumper, I have a couple of questions for you, Jim, in that some of my my Anjou pears. Now, these were ones that I didn't have any more room in my fridge for cold storage, so I just put them out on the counter. It was a good year for my Anjou pears. And, I'd say 80% of them ripened, softened, and they were good. I mean, maybe not quite as good as if they'd gone under cold storage. But I have, dozen and a half now that just will not ripen. They've been sitting out there for probably a month now. And they just won't soften. What's going on, Jim? that's our new segment of the Dirt Bag. What's going on, Jim?
What's going on? My guess is that they probably would benefit from some cold storage. Put them in your fridge for a month, putting them back out again.
Yeah, boy, I've been, I've probably squeezed them dozens of times, you know, just to see if they're soft, and
right. They're
probably little dimples all over the place there.
Well, try that.
Okay, yeah. Well, as soon as I'm going to start bringing out some of the cold storage ones, and then I can replace them with these.
Sure.
Okay.
And let me know at the next show.
Right. And my other question is, my neighbor, he's not a neighbor, but he's one of my hive hosts. Actually, I have bees in his backyard, and now he's become a friend. Uh-huh. He's been giving me quite a few pawpaws. It's been a good year for pawpaws now, too. And similar to the question about, well, what do you do with persimmon? Is, well, what do you do with pawpaws besides eat them fresh? And I know you made gelato out of them one time.
Yeah, they make great ice cream.
So what typically can one do with pawpaws?
Well, eat them.
Yeah, and that's what I've been doing.
Right.
Trying to keep up.
Yeah. That's probably the two things that I've done. That is the two things that I have done primarily.
Okay.
I know that there are people who use them for baking and all, but I've not done it myself, and I can't remember really the eating the items, but at least I know of that happening. Because with many of these things, I know that there are recipes online that you can find for it. But I know people who have made pawpaw wine, but I can't recommend it. So I just haven't tried it. Cause one problem is I don't drink wine. Ice cream and fresh eating are the two areas where I would pursue that I'd pursue with it.
Well, I've been contemplating, planting, two pawpaws, but it's a 2 to 5 year commitment before fruit happens. And as long as my hive host is having a bumper year on pawpaws, I may not need to.
That's true.
If there's not much else besides fresh eating, I mean, you got to eat them up because you can't really preserve them too well.
You can freeze the pulp.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which I've done, and then you can eat it later, as a topping on yogurt,
right,
on ice cream. Just use it as a topping for ice cream. It's such a wonderful flavor, such a very tropical, fruity flavor.
Yeah, yeah,
it really tastes great for that.
Do that. Okay, well, Jim, you got our stumper ready?
Sure.
Okay, Patsy, do you have our stumper theme ready to roll here? No, it's the last one that's on my disc there, the Stumper theme. We don't actually need it. Okay, don't worry about it there. We're running short on time anyway. So, Jim, okay, here is the Garden Stumper.
Okay, so this fits into our plant of the month. And so here's the stumper. So there are many, many people know about Asian persimmons. It's what we find in the markets, the large ones, as we said before, round ones, pointy ones. They're probably one of the most widely grown fruits in the world in many Asian countries, China, Japan, Korea, Vietnam, other countries. They're the main fruit. We also have a Native American persimmon. And it's the stumper is, what is its Latin name, and where does it grow in nature?
In the United States?
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
In the United States. So it's really a very wonderful fruit, actually. I'm surrounded by it at this very moment because we're harvesting it. And, I can't believe how good it is. It's really excellent fruit.
Okay, so the scientific, the Latin name, and yep. Where does it grow? Where is it native to?
Yep, is it grown?
All right, naturally. In these United States. Okay, so if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187, that would be the same number to call if you had a question. So either a question or an answer, same number. Well, I want to run down my list here of how we can use leaves, or as I call it, there must be 50 ways to love your leaves. And I did resist playing Paul Simon's 50 ways to leave your lover, of what that takes on here. So I have, and I forgot my glasses, but I can see pretty well here. I don't have 58. I don't have 50. I have 33 ways. So I'm just going to read these there and maybe offer up some comments. And so if anybody has a different or an additional use for leaves, I would gladly add it to my list. Let us know at that same number. Okay. Well, some of these are obvious ones, and some are very closely related, but I needed to get to 50, so I made them two separates. So you can use on your vegetable beds in the fall, when it is too late to plant cover crops, which is not too late now. You can still plant cover crop, fava beans, crimson clover, rye. We talked about this last month. Field peas, vetches. Two, use on perennial beds. Leaves can be put on dry to avoid matting. So put them around your rhodies, if you have rhodies or roses or whatever plants you have. Three, use as a mulch in the summer. Why not? Leave them on. Number four, use as a mulch in the winter. Number five, use as a mulch in the fall, then take them off in the spring for use in the compost pile. Yeah, keep the weeds down, keeps the rain from compacting the soil, gives the worms something to pull down into their burrows, etc. Number six, mulch in the fall, then leave them in place in the spring and plant through your prepared beds. So what I do frequently is, when it is too late to put leaves or to plant a cover crop on my veggie beds, I'll cover them with leaves, and then in the spring or late spring, just take a handful out to get to the soil, and then I'll plant my squash or tomato or whatever right through there, leaving the leaves on, which then becomes mulch, a permanent mulch, if you will. Number seven, use to kill lawn by spreading a layer of leaves 6 to 8 inches thick. This is also known as sheet mulching. And number eight, with a mulching mower, leave them in place to break down right on the lawn. These mulching mowers are pretty remarkable, and it's a wonderful way to add organic matter effortlessly to your lawn. Number nine, compost by themselves for at least 2 years. The finished compost product is known as leaf mold. It's excellent at holding water. It looks like coffee grounds. That's what leaf mold ends up looking like. Number 10, use leaf compost as fertilizer. Yeah, This might be stretching it a little bit, but pound for pound, the leaves of most trees contain twice as many minerals as manure. Not the case with nitrogen, but still those trace minerals. Number 11, you just use them to compost with grass in your compost pile. It's a great carbon source. Number 12, use as bedding in your worm bin. Now, I've bragged about this, I'll say, in the past, but my worm bin has been in continuous operation for more than a quarter of a century. And my bedding of choice are leaves, so I'll stockpile those in the fall. And
you're dating yourself.
That's some old worms, too. We're up to number 13 here. Save in a bag in the fall for use in the spring, whether you want to use them for compost on the beds or using them to mix with your grass in the spring where you may not have fresh leaves available. 14, use as path material in the winter to keep your shoes clean. Yeah, no sense walking on mud. Walk on leaves. Number 15, uses the path material to keep weeds at bay. So even if you're not walking on them too much, but it'll keep the weeds down in your paths. Okay, the next batch has to do, as I've said here, you don't have to wait until the leaves fall to the ground to appreciate them, though.
Picking them off the tree, do you?
Excuse me?
You don't suggest picking the leaves
off the tree. Here's on the tree, leaves do the following. And number 16, increase the value of a home. How about that? Along with the trees, of course. I mean, big shade trees increase the value of your home. 17?
As long as you advertise it before their fall, make a big mess on the ground.
Well, that's true. Number 17, they improve air quality. Mm-hmm. 18, provide privacy and help muffle noise. Number 19, create shade that can keep a home up to 20 degrees cooler in the summer. Number 20, enable a cooling effect brought about by transpiration. Number 21, it creates oxygen. Number 22, use and sequester carbon dioxide. Number 23, this might be stretching it. It inspires poets.
Oh, of course.
Yes, okay. Number 24.
Part of that one.
Provide a spectacular symphony of color in the fall. Number 25. Compel some of us to learn why leaves change. I have that in quotes, color. Because the leaves don't actually change color. They just lose the chlorophyll, which means the green leaves, and what's left is all these spectacular colors. Mm-hmm. Number 26, when they are just buds in the early spring, they provide proof that warmer weather is on the way. Now, next category, when leaves are still on the ground, they, 27, provide exercise to those raking them up. 28, tempt kids and some adults to jump in the pile. 29, provide work for city employees when they clean them up. Okay, and another category in the home.
Who wrote this list?
I did.
Oh, I see. And you're interested in keeping city employees busy.
Well, I'm just saying that is one thing that leaves do.
There's other things that do that as well.
Well, it's true. But I'm not talking about those things. Okay.
Oh, that's a good one. Thanks.
Okay, so in the home, leaves can be used. This is number 30 in art projects. And number 31 as decorations. And finally, on the international level, leaves, number 32, inspired the Canadians to put one on the flag, their national flag. And my last one here, 33, what leaves do is give the olive branch its peace significance. Because if the olive branch was just a branch and didn't have leaves, it would be an olive twig.
and it wouldn't mean anything. You'd say, well, you're giving me this twig? Why are you giving me this twig? I'm going to fight you some more. Anyway, I think you get my point there, that the leaves gives it its significance.
I'm really curious, Glenn. How long did it take you to come up with the list?
Well, I first wrote this list probably 15 years ago.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So I may or may not have been adding to it, but there must be 50 ways to love your leaves, but I only have 33 here. So if somebody has 17 more ways to use your leaves, then I'm up for it. Okay, so that's a pretty good list. And they're pretty easy to get too. Even on my own lot, my house in Northeast Portland, I have fruit trees, but I don't have any shade tree leaves. No maples. I have some western red cedars, but they don't provide these type of leaves that were the broadleaf leaves. But my street has lots, and so I'll either go out and get some, you know, pick them up with a pitchfork, or sometimes I'll even run a power lawnmower over dry leaves and shred them up and put those right on my vegetable beds. I like them in that condition. But that's one of the things that I'll be doing this in the next week or so after it rains, dealing with leaves.
Well, I've got a bunch out here. You know, if you, I wouldn't charge you anything for them.
Yeah, that's the problem. You're there and I'm here. The leaves are there. I mean, right.
That's right. Yep.
Okay, Jim, we want to talk. We're not going to have any time for more music breaks here, but I want to hear a little bit about your trip to Korea and Russia. Did you learn anything?
Yeah.
Give me some ideas of what you learned new.
Okay, so we flew to Korea, a pretty comfortable flight down to San Francisco, then over to Seoul, and then we were there about 4 days with our friends and looked at persimmons and jujubes, went to a couple of different experiment stations, seeing what they're doing with them, what breeding work they're doing, what's interesting to them. Checked out some Asian pears, kind of a interesting experience there where they have four varieties they want to introduce to the U.S., and they're working on that process. And we tasted them and sampled them, and they were very crisp and juicy and really nice fruit, big fruit. I think they might have a future here, but one of the interesting things about Asia is that a lot of fruit they value doesn't have the same flavor profile as what we do. So that I was a little challenged with that. But otherwise, I mean, it's kind of an interesting process, and definitely the trip itself. Korea is a really neat country. The infrastructure, they've obviously invested in it over the years. The trains run really fast on their own dedicated tracks. They don't have to wait for freight trains like ours do.
Uh-huh.
The roads are excellent, and the countryside is not flat. So they have many tunnels. They have to go through hills to make these really nice freeways. And one thing that really impresses us is the rest stops, which are not just like a place to use the bathroom, but they're a little community in themselves with restaurants and booths selling really interesting things and exercise machines.
Wow.
It's really neat.
Well, I want to go back to the Asian pear thing, comment. Did you grab or get any new stock?
Well, these four varieties, they're hoping to import them. The process of getting Asian pears into the country is complicated, so it's not something that we could do there at the time. But they could go through the permit process. Once that goes through, then we'll have them here.
Okay.
But so from Korea, we flew a fairly short flight to Vladivostok, Russia, where our friends live, who will actually be coming here this winter to visit us. And I went swimming in the Sea of Japan. The water temperature was about 65 degrees.
Ooh.
And short little high waves, which was really fun. I mean, I got knocked over a few times, but it was easy, and I loved it. I really had a great time. Probably one of my best swimming experiences of the summer. And then got on the train and went to Siberia, where we met winter. Yeah, it was really to Ulaanu Day, or Ulaanu, as some people might say, on Lake Baikal, which was a very beautiful place, I think, really wonderful. It's kind of the Buddhist capital of Russia, and there are many Buddhist temples, and people there are really kind of Mongolian. The native people are sort of Mongolian in descent. There's there's a lot of seaberry action there, which is what our goal was there. They have unique varieties of seaberry, which we're hoping to bring into the U.S., and we already have some from years ago. So we were checking that out, seeing our friends. Then we went by train around the bottom of Lake Baikal to the city of Irkutsk, Russia, where another friend lives, and there it was actually snowing.
And, oh, man.
About 24 degrees. We were barely, barely ready for that.
We're going to have to wrap up, Jim. We're out of time here, but Spain sounds like a better bet this time of year. Okay, Jim, thanks a lot for calling in. Safe travels to you.
Thanks,
you bet. Thank you, listeners. Thanks, Patsy. We'll be back. Jim, are you back next month?
Yeah, see you in November.
Okay, have a good month. This is Glenn Andreessen. Be well.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Space is Deployed.